Maybe I too would leave the legal profession. Maybe there was a higher calling for me as well. With these weighty considerations on my mind, I turned out the lights, locked the door to my office, and walked out into the thick heat of another summer's night. Chapter 6. The Wisdom of Personal Change. I am an artist at living. My work of art is my life. Suzuki. True to his word, Julian showed up at my home the next evening. At about 7:15 p.m., I heard four quick knocks on the front door of my house. A Cape Cod design with awful pink shutters, which my wife believed made our house look like something out of Architectural Digest. Julian himself looked strikingly different than he had the day before. He still embodied radiant health and exuded a wonderful sense of calm. It was what he was wearing that made me a little uncomfortable. Adorning his obviously supple body was a long red robe topped by an ornately embroidered blue hood. And though it was another sticky night in July, the hood covered his head. "Greetings, my friend," Julian offered enthusiastically. "Greetings. Don't look so alarmed. What did you expect me to wear? Armani?" We both started to laugh, softly at first. Soon our giggles had turned to guffaws. Julian certainly had not lost that wicked sense of humor that had kept me entertained so long ago. As we relaxed in my cluttered but comfortable living room, I couldn't help but notice the ornate necklace of wooden prayer beads dangling from his neck. "What are those? They're really beautiful." "More about these later," he said, rubbing some of the beads with his thumb and index finger. "We have much to talk about tonight." "Let's get started. I could hardly get anything done at work today. I was so excited about our meeting." Hearing his cue, Julian immediately started to reveal more about his personal transformation and the ease with which it was affected. He told me of the ancient techniques he had learned for mind control and for erasing the habit of worry that was consuming so many in our complex society. He spoke of the wisdom that Yogi Raman and the other monks had shared for living a more purposeful and rewarding life. And he spoke of a series of methods to unleash the wellspring of youthfulness and energy. He said every one of us has slumbering deep inside of us. Though the conviction with which he spoke was clear, I began to grow skeptical. Was I the victim of some prank? After all, this Harvard-trained lawyer was once widely known within the firm for his practical jokes. As well, his story was nothing less than fantastic. Think about it. One of this country's best-known trial lawyers throws in the towel, sells all his worldly goods, and treks off to India on a spiritual odyssey, only to return as a wise prophet from the Himalayas. This could not be real. "Come on, Julian, stop pulling my leg. This whole story is starting to smack of one of your gags." "I'll bet you rented that robe from the costume shop across the street from my office," I suggested, breaking into my best fear grin. Julian was quick to respond, as if my disbelief was something he had expected. "In court, how do you prove your case?" "I offer persuasive evidence." "Right. Look at the evidence that I have offered you. Look at my smooth, lineless face. Look at my physique. Can't you sense the abundance of energy I have? Look at my peacefulness. Surely you can see that I have changed." He had a point. This was a man who only a few years ago had looked decades older. "You didn't go to a plastic surgeon, did you?" "No," he smiled. "They only focus on the outer person. I needed to be healed from within. My unbalanced, chaotic lifestyle left me in great distress. It was much more than a heart attack that I suffered. It was a rupture of my inner core. But your story, it's so mysterious and unusual." Julian remained calm and patient in the face of my persistence. Spotting the pot of tea I had left on the table next to him, He started to pour into my waiting cup. He poured until the cup was full, but then he kept on pouring. Tea started to trickle down the sides of the cup and into the saucer, then onto my wife's prized Persian rug. At first I watched silently. Then I couldn't take it any more. "Julian, what are you doing? My cup is overflowing. No matter how hard you try, no more will go in," I yelled impatiently. He looked at me for a long moment. "Please don't take this the wrong way. I really respect you, John. I always have. However, just like this cup, you seem to be full of your own ideas. And how can any more go in until you first empty your cup?" I was struck by the truth of his words. He was right. My many years in the conservative legal world, doing the same things every day with the same people who thought the same thoughts every day, had filled my cup to the brim. My wife Jenny was always telling me that we should be meeting new people and exploring new things. "I wish you were just a little more adventurous, John," she would say. I couldn't remember the last time I had read a book that didn't deal with law. The profession was my life. I began to realize that the sterile world I had grown accustomed to had dulled my creativity and limited my vision. "Okay, I see your point," I admitted. "Perhaps all my years as a trial lawyer have made me a hardened skeptic. From the minute I saw you in my office yesterday, something deep inside me told me that your transformation was genuine, and that there was some sort of lesson in it for me. Maybe I just didn't want to believe it." "John, tonight is the first night of your new life. I simply ask that you think deeply about the wisdom and strategies that I will share with you, and apply them with conviction for a period of 1 month. Embrace the methods with a deep trust in their effectiveness. There is a reason why they have survived for thousands of years. They work." 1 month seems like a long time. 672 hours of inner work to profoundly improve every waking moment of the rest of your life is quite a bargain, don't you think? Investing in yourself is the best investment you will ever make. It will not only improve your life, it will improve the lives of all those around you. How's that? It is only when you have mastered the art of loving yourself that you can truly love others. It's only when you have opened your own heart that you can touch the hearts of others. When you feel centered and alive, you are in a much better position to be a better person. What can I expect to happen in those 672 hours that comprise 1 month? I asked earnestly. You will experience changes within the workings of your mind, body, and even your soul that will astonish you. You will have more energy, enthusiasm, and inner harmony than you have had in perhaps your entire life. People will actually begin telling you that you look younger and happier. A lasting sense of well-being and balance will swiftly return to your life. These are just some of the benefits of the Sivanand system. Wow! All of what you will hear tonight is designed to improve your life, not just personally and professionally, but spiritually as well. The advice of the sages is just as current today as it was 5,000 years ago. It will not only enrich your inner world, it will enhance your outer world and make you far more effective in all that you do. This wisdom is truly the most potent force I have ever encountered. It is straightforward, practical, and has been tested in the laboratory of life for centuries. Most importantly, it will work for anyone. But before I share this knowledge with you, I must ask you for a promise. I knew that there would be strings attached. "There are no free lunches," my loving mother used to say. Once you see the power of the strategies and skills shown to me by the sages of Sivana, and observe the dramatic results they will bring to your life, You must make it your mission to pass this wisdom on to others who will benefit from this knowledge. This is all that I ask of you. By agreeing to this, you will help me fulfill my own pact with Yogi Raman." I agreed without reservation. Julian began to teach me the system he had come to consider as sacred. While the techniques that Julian had mastered during his stay were varied, at the heart of the Sivanan system were 7 basic virtues, 7 fundamental principles that embodied the keys to self-leadership, personal responsibility, and spiritual enlightenment. Julian told me that Yogi Raman was the first to share the 7 virtues with him after a few months in Sivana. On a clear night, when all the others had drifted off into deep slumber, Raman knocked softly on the door of Julian's hut. In the voice of a gentle guide, he spoke his mind. "I have observed you closely for many days now, Julian. I believe that you are a decent man who deeply desires to fill his life with all that is good. Since you have arrived, you have opened yourself up to our traditions and embraced them as your own. You have learned a number of our daily habits and have seen their many salutary effects. You have been respectful of our ways. Our people have lived this simple, peaceful life through countless ages, and our methods are known to but a few. The world needs to hear our philosophy on enlightened living. Tonight, on the eve of your 3rd month in Sivana, I will begin to share the inner workings of our system with you, not only for your benefit, but for the benefit of all those in your part of the world. I will sit with you daily as I sat with my son when he was a child. Sadly, he passed on a few years ago. His time had come, and I do not question his exit. I enjoyed our time together and cherished the memories. I now see you as my son, and I feel grateful that all I have learned over many years of silent contemplation will live on within you." I looked at Julian and noticed that his eyes were now shut, as if he were transporting himself back to this fairy tale land that had showered the blessing of knowledge on him. "Yogi Raman told me that the 7 virtues for a life overflowing with inner peace, joy, and a wealth of spiritual gifts were contained within a mystical fable. This fable was the essence of it all. He asked me to shut my eyes, as I have now done, here on the floor of your living room. He then told me to picture the following scene in my mind's eye. You are sitting in the middle of a magnificent, lush, green garden. This garden is filled with the most spectacular flowers you have ever seen. The environment is supremely tranquil and silent. Savor the sensual delights of this garden, and feel as if you have all the time in the world to enjoy this natural oasis. As you look around, you see that in the center of this magical garden stands a towering red lighthouse, 6 stories high. Suddenly, the silence of the garden is disturbed by a loud creaking as the door at the base of the lighthouse opens. Out stumbles a 9-foot-tall, 900-pound Japanese sumo wrestler, who casually wanders into the center of the garden. "It gets better," chuckled Julian. "The Japanese sumo wrestler is almost totally naked. He has a pink wire cable covering his private parts." As this sumo wrestler starts to move around the garden, he finds a shiny gold stopwatch, which someone left behind many years earlier. He slips it on and falls to the ground with an enormous thud. The sumo wrestler is rendered unconscious and lies there, silent and still. Just when you think he has taken his last breath, the wrestler awakens, perhaps stirred by the fragrance of some fresh yellow roses blooming nearby. Energized, the wrestler jumps swiftly to his feet and intuitively looks to his left. He is startled by what he sees. Through the bushes at the very edge of the garden, he observes a long, winding path, covered by millions of sparkling diamonds. Something seems to instruct the wrestler to take the path, and to his credit, he does. This path leads him down the road of everlasting joy and eternal bliss. After hearing this strange tale high atop the Himalayas, seated next to a monk who had seen the torchlight of enlightenment firsthand, Julian was disappointed. Quite simply, he thought he was going to hear something earth-shattering, knowledge that would stir him to action, perhaps even move him to tears. Instead, all he heard was a silly story about a sumo wrestler and a lighthouse. Yogi Raman detected his dismay. "Never overlook the power of simplicity," Julian was told. "This story may not be the sophisticated discourse that you expected," said the sage. "But there is a universe of sensibility in its message, and a purity in its purpose. From the day you arrived, I have thought long and hard as to how I would share our knowledge with you. At first, I considered giving you a series of lectures over a period of months, but realized that this traditional approach was ill-suited to the magical nature of the wisdom you are about to receive. I then thought of asking all my brothers and sisters to spend a little time with you every day, tutoring you in our philosophy. However, this too was not the most effective way for you to learn what it is we have to tell. After great deliberation, I finally arrived at what I thought was a very creative, yet highly effective way to share the entire system of Sivana with its seven virtues. And that is this mystical fable." The sage added, "At first it might seem to be frivolous, and perhaps even childish. But I assure you that every element of the fable embodies a timeless principle for radiant living. It has great depth of meaning. The garden, the lighthouse, the sumo wrestler, the pink wire cable, the stopwatch, the roses, and the winding path of diamonds are symbols of the seven timeless virtues for an enlightened life. I can also assure you that if you remember this little story and the fundamental truths that it represents, you will carry within you all that you need to know to raise your life to its highest level. You will have all the information and strategies you will need to profoundly influence the quality of your life and the lives of all those you touch. And when you apply this wisdom on a daily basis, you will change, mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. Please write this story deep into your mind and carry it within your heart. It will only make a dramatic difference if you embrace it without reservation." "Luckily, John," said Julian, "I did embrace it. Carl Jung once said that your vision will become clear only when you can look into your heart. Who looks outside dreams. Who looks inside awakens. On that very special night, I looked deep into my heart and awakened to the secrets of the ages for enriching the mind, cultivating the body, and nourishing the soul. It is now my turn to share them with you." Chapter 7. A Most Extraordinary Garden. Most people live, whether physically, intellectually, or morally, in a very restricted circle of their potential being. We all have reservoirs of life to draw upon, of which we do not dream. William James. "In the fable, the garden is a symbol for the mind," said Julian. "If you care for your mind, if you nurture it, and if you cultivate it just like a fertile, rich garden, it will blossom far beyond your expectations. But if you let the weeds take root, lasting peace of mind and deep inner harmony will always elude you. John, let me ask you a simple question. If I went into your backyard, where you have that garden you used to tell me so much about, and threw toxic waste all over your prized petunias, you wouldn't be thrilled, would you? Agreed. As a matter of fact, most good gardeners guard their gardens like proud soldiers and make certain that no contamination ever enters. Yet look at the toxic waste that most people put in the fertile garden of their minds every single day. The worries and anxieties, the fretting about the past, the brooding over the future, and those self-created fears that wreak havoc within your inner world. In the native language of the sages of Sivana, which has existed for thousands of years, the written character for worry is strikingly similar to the character symbolizing a funeral pyre. Yogi Raman told me that this was no mere coincidence. Worry drains the mind of much of its power, and sooner or later it injures the soul. To live life to the fullest, you must stand guard at the gate of your garden and let only the very best information enter. You truly cannot afford the luxury of a negative thought, not even one. The most joyful, dynamic, and contented people of this world are no different from you or me in terms of their makeup. We are all flesh and bones. We all come from the same universal source. However, the ones who do more than just exist, the ones who fan the flames of their human potential and truly savor the magical dance of life, do different things than those whose lives are ordinary. Foremost among the things that they do is adopt a positive paradigm about their world and all that is in it. Julian added, "The sages taught me that on an average day, the average person runs about 60,000 thoughts through his mind. What really amazed me, though, was that 95% of those thoughts were the same as the ones you thought the day before." "Are you serious?" I asked. "Very. This is the tyranny of impoverished thinking. Those people who think the same thoughts every day, most of them negative, have fallen into bad mental habits. Rather than focusing on all the good in their lives and thinking of ways to make things even better, they are captives of their pasts. Some of them worry about failed relationships or financial problems. Others fret over their less-than-perfect childhoods. Still others brood over more trifling matters, the way a store clerk might have treated them, or the comment of a co-worker that smacked of ill will. Those who run their minds in this fashion are allowing worry to rob them of their life force. They are blocking the enormous potential of their minds to work magic and deliver into their lives all that they want, emotionally, physically, and, yes, even spiritually. These people never realize that mind management is the essence of life management. The way you think stems from habit, pure and simple, Julian continued with conviction. Most people just don't realize the enormous power of their minds. I have learned that even the best conditioned thinkers are using only 1/100th of a percent of their mental reserves. In Sivana, the sages dared to explore the untapped potential of their mental capacity on a regular basis, and the results were astounding. Yogi Raman, through regular and disciplined practice, had conditioned his mind so that he was able to slow down his heartbeat at will. He had even trained himself to go for weeks without sleep. While I would never suggest that these should be goals for you to aspire to, I do suggest that you start to see your mind for what it is, nature's greatest gift. Are there some exercises I can do to unlock this mind power? Being able to slow down my heartbeat would definitely make me a hit on the cocktail party circuit, I suggested cheekily. Don't worry about that now, John. I'll give you some practical techniques that you can try later that will show you the power of this ancient technology. For now, what is important is that you understand that mental mastery comes through conditioning. Nothing more and nothing less. Most of us have the same raw materials from the moment we take our first breath of air, What separates those people who achieve more than others, or those who are happier than others, is the way that they use and refine these raw materials. When you dedicate yourself to transforming your inner world, your life quickly shifts from the ordinary into the realm of the extraordinary. My teacher was growing more excited by the moment. His eyes seemed to twinkle as he spoke of the magic of the mind and the wealth of goodness it would surely bring. You know, John, when all is said and done, there is only one thing that we have absolute dominion over. Our kids, I said, smiling good-naturedly. No, my friend. Our minds. We might not be able to control the weather, or the traffic, or the moods of all those around us. But we most certainly can control our attitude towards these events. We all have the power to determine what we will think about in any given moment. This ability is part of what makes us human. You see, one of the fundamental gems of worldly wisdom I have learned in my travels to the East is also one of the most simple. Julian then paused, as if to summon up a priceless gift. And what might that be? There is no such thing as objective reality, or the real world. There are no absolutes. The face of your greatest enemy might be the face of my finest friend. An event that appears to be tragedy to one might reveal the seeds of unlimited opportunity to another. What really separates people who are habitually upbeat and optimistic from those who are consistently miserable is how the circumstances of life are interpreted and processed. Julian, how could a tragedy be anything but a tragedy? Here's a quick example. When I was traveling through Calcutta, I met a schoolteacher named Malika Chand. She loved teaching and treated her students as she would her own children, nurturing their potential with great kindness. Her perennial motto was, "Your I can is more important than your IQ." She was known throughout her community as a person who lived to give, who selflessly served anyone in need. Sadly, her beloved school, which had stood as a silent witness to the delightful progress of generations of children, succumbed to the flames of a fire set by an arsonist one night. All those in the community felt this great loss. But as time passed, their anger gave way to apathy, and they resigned themselves to the fact that their children would be without a school. What about Malika? She was different. An eternal optimist if ever there was one. Unlike everyone around her, she perceived opportunity in what had happened. She told all the parents that every setback offers an equivalent benefit, if they took the time to search for it. This event was a gift in disguise. The school that burned to the ground was old and decrepit. The roof leaked, and the floor had finally buckled under the strain of 1,000 little feet scampering across its surface. This was the chance that they had been waiting for, to join hands as a community and build a much better school, one that would serve many more children in the years to come. And so, with this 64-year-old dynamo behind them, they marshaled their collective resources and raised enough funds to build a sparkling new school, one that stood as a shining example of the power of vision in the face of adversity. So it's like that old adage about seeing the cup as half full rather than half empty. That's a fair way to look at it. No matter what happens to you in your life, you alone have the capacity to choose your response to it. When you form the habit of searching for the positive in every circumstance, your life will move into its highest dimensions. This is one of the greatest of all the natural laws. And it all starts with using your mind more effectively? Exactly, John. All successes in life, whether material or spiritual, start with that 12-pound mass sitting between your shoulders. Or, more specifically, with the thoughts that you put into your mind every second of every minute of every day. Your outer world reflects the state of your inner world. By controlling the thoughts that you think, and the way you respond to the events of your life, you begin to control your destiny. This makes so much sense, Julian. I guess my life has become so busy that I have never taken the time to think about these things. When I was in law school, my best friend Alex used to love reading inspirational books. He said that they kept him motivated and energized in the face of our crushing workload. I remember him telling me that one of them said that the Chinese character for crisis is composed of two sub-characters, one that spells danger and another that spells opportunity. I guess that even the ancient Chinese knew that there is a bright side to the darkest circumstance, if you have the courage to look for it. Yogi Raman put it this way: there are no mistakes in life, only lessons. There is no such thing as a negative experience, only opportunities to grow, learn, and advance along the road of self-mastery. From struggle comes strength. Even pain can be a wonderful teacher. Pain, I protested. Absolutely. To transcend pain, you must first experience it. Or to put it another way, how can you really know the joy of being on the summit of the mountain unless you have first visited the lowest valley? Get my point? To savor the good, one must know the bad? Yes. But I suggest that you stop judging events as either positive or negative. Rather, simply experience them. Celebrate them and learn from them. Every event offers you lessons. These little lessons fuel your inner and outer growth. Without them, you would be stuck on a plateau. Just think about it in your own life. Most people have grown the most from their most challenging experiences. And if you meet with an outcome you did not expect and feel a little disappointed, remember that the laws of nature always ensure that when one door closes, another opens. Julian started to raise his arms in excitement, much as a southern minister might while preaching to his congregation. Once you consistently apply this principle to your daily life and start to condition your mind to translate every event into a positive, empowering one, you will banish worry forever. You will stop being a prisoner of your past. Instead, you will become the architect of your future. Okay, I understand the concept. Every experience, even the worst, offers me a lesson. Therefore, I should open my mind to the learning in every event. In this way, I will grow stronger and happier. What else might a humble middle-class lawyer do to improve things? First of all, begin to live out of the glory of your imagination, not your memory. Run that one by me again. All I'm saying is that to liberate the potential of your mind, body, and soul, you must first expand your imagination. You see, things are always created twice. First in the workshop of the mind, and then, and only then, in reality. I call the process blueprinting, because anything that you create in your outer world began as a simple blueprint in your inner world, on the lush picture screen of your mind. When you learn to take control of your thoughts and vividly imagine all that you desire from this worldly existence in a state of total expectancy, dormant forces will awaken inside you. You will begin to unlock the true potential of your mind to create the kind of magical life that I believe you deserve. From tonight onwards, forget about the past. Dare to dream that you are more than the sum of your current circumstances. Expect the best. You will be astonished at the result. You know, John, all those years in the legal profession, I thought I knew so much. I spent years studying at the finest schools, reading all the law books I could get my hands on, and working with the best role models. Sure, I was a winner at the game of law. Yet I now realize I was losing in the game of life. I was so busy chasing the big pleasures of life that I missed out on all the little ones. I never read those great books my father used to tell me to read. I haven't built any great friendships. I've never learned to appreciate great music. Having said this, I really think I am one of the lucky ones. My heart attack was my defining moment, my personal wake-up call, if you will. Believe it or not, it gave me a second chance to live a richer, more inspired life. Like Malika Chand, I saw the seeds of opportunity in my painful experience. More importantly, I had the courage to nourish them. I could see that while Julian had grown younger on the outside, he had grown far wiser within. I realized that this evening was more than just a fascinating conversation with an old friend. I realized that tonight could be my own defining moment and a clear chance for a new beginning. My mind started to consider all that was wrong in my own life. Sure, I had a great family and a stable job as a well-regarded lawyer. Yet, in my quiet moments, I knew there had to be more. I had to fill that emptiness that was starting to envelop my life. When I was a kid, I dreamed such great dreams. Often I visualized myself as a sports hero or as a business tycoon. I really believed that I could do, have, and be whatever I wanted. I also remembered the way I used to feel as a young boy, growing up on the sun-splashed West Coast. Fun came in the form of simple pleasures. Fun was spending a glorious afternoon skinny-dipping or riding through the woods on my bicycle. I had such a curiosity for life. I was an adventurer. There were no limits on what my future could bring. I honestly don't think I have felt that kind of freedom and joy for 15 years. What happened? Perhaps I lost sight of my dreams when I became an adult, and resigned myself to acting the way adults were supposed to act. Maybe I lost sight of them when I went to law school and started talking like lawyers were supposed to talk. In any event, that evening with Julian at my side, pouring his heart out over a cup of cold tea, made me resolve to stop spending so much time making a living and to spend far more time creating a life. "Looks like I have you thinking about your life also," Julian observed. "Start thinking about your dreams for a change, just like when you were a little child. Jonas Salk said it best when he wrote, 'I have had dreams and I have had nightmares. I overcame the nightmares because of my dreams.'" Dare to dust off your dreams, John. Start to revere life again and celebrate all of its wonders. Awaken yourself to the power of your own mind to make things happen. Once you do, the universe will conspire with you to work magic in your life. Julian then reached into the depths of his robe and pulled out a little card about the size of a business card, which had tears along its sides, apparently the result of many months of constant use. One day, while Yogi Raman and I were walking along a quiet mountain path, I asked him who his favorite philosopher was. He told me that he had many influences in his life, and it was difficult for him to single out any one source for his inspiration. There was one quotation, however, that he carried deep within his heart, one that encapsulated all the values he had come to cherish over a life spent in quiet contemplation. At that glorious place, deep within the middle of nowhere, this learned sage of the East shared it with me. I too etched its words into my heart. They serve as a daily reminder of all that we are and all that we can be. The words came from the great Indian philosopher Patanjali. Repeating them aloud every morning before I sit down to meditate has had a very profound influence on the course of my days. Remember, John, words are the verbal embodiment of power. Julian then showed me the card. The quotation read, "When you are inspired by some great purpose, some extraordinary project, all of your thoughts break their bonds. Your mind transcends limitations. Your consciousness expands in every direction, and you find yourself in a new, great, and wonderful world. Dormant forces, faculties, and talents become alive, and you discover yourself to be a greater person, than you ever dreamt yourself to be. In that instant, I saw the connection between physical vitality and mental agility. Julian was in picture-perfect health and looked many years younger than he had when we had first met. He brimmed with vibrancy, and it appeared that his energy, enthusiasm, and optimism knew no bounds. I could see that he had made many changes to his former lifestyle, but it was obvious that the starting point of his magnificent transformation was mental fitness. Success on the outside indeed begins with success on the inside, and by changing his thoughts, Julian Mantle had changed his life. Exactly how can I develop this positive, serene, and inspired attitude, Julian? After all these years in my routine, I think my mental muscles have grown a little flabby. Come to think of it, I have very little control over the thoughts that are floating around the garden of my mind, I said with sincerity. The mind is a wonderful servant, but a terrible master. If you have become a negative thinker, this is because you have not cared for your mind and taken the time to train it to focus on the good. Winston Churchill said that the price of greatness is responsibility over each of your thoughts. Then you will install the vibrant mindset you are looking for. Remember, the mind truly is like any other muscle in your body. Use it or lose it. Are you saying that if I don't exercise my mind, it will grow weak? Yes. Look at it this way. If you want to strengthen the muscles of your arm to achieve more, you must train them. If you want to toughen up your leg muscles, you must first exert them. Similarly, your mind will do wonderful things for you if you will only let it. It will attract all that you desire into your life once you learn how to operate it effectively. It will create ideal health if you care for it properly. And it will return to its natural state of peacefulness and tranquility, if you have the vision to ask for it. The sages of Sivana have a very special saying. The boundaries of your life are merely creations of the self. I don't think I understand that one, Julian. Enlightened thinkers know that their thoughts form their world, and the quality of one's life comes down to the richness of one's thoughts. If you want to live a more peaceful, meaningful life, you must think more peaceful, meaningful thoughts. Hit me with the quick fix, Julian. What do you mean? Julian asked gently, running his bronzed fingers along the front of his brilliantly textured robe. I'm excited about what you are telling me, but I'm an impatient guy. Don't you have any exercises or techniques that I can use right now, here in my own living room, to change the way I run my mind? Quick fixes do not work. All lasting inner change requires time and effort. Persistence is the mother of personal change. I'm not saying that it will take years to make profound changes in your life. If you diligently apply the strategies I am sharing with you every day for only 1 month, you will be astonished at the results. You will begin to tap into the highest levels of your own capacity and enter the realm of the miraculous. But to reach this destination, you must not get hung up on the outcome. Instead, enjoy the process of personal expansion and growth. Ironically, the less you focus on the end result, the quicker it will come. How so? It's like that classic story of the young boy who traveled far from his home to study under a great teacher. When he met the wise old man, his first question was, "How long will it take me before I am as wise as you?" The response came swiftly, 5 years. "This is a very long time," the boy replied. "How about if I work twice as hard?" "Then it will take 10," said the master. 10? That's far too long. How about if I studied all day and well into the night every night?" 15 years, said the sage. "I don't understand," replied the boy. "Every time I promise to devote more energy to my goal, you tell me that it will take longer. Why?" "The answer is simple. With one eye fixed on the destination, there is only one left to guide you along the journey. Point well taken, counselor, I conceded graciously. Sounds like the story of my life. Be patient, and live with the knowledge that all you are searching for is certain to come, if you prepare for it and expect it. But I've never been the lucky sort, Julian. All that I have ever received has come through sheer persistence. What is luck, my friend? Julian replied kindly. It is nothing more than the marriage of preparation with opportunity. Julian added softly, Before I give you the precise methods passed on to me by the sages of Savannah, I must first share a couple of key principles. First, always remember that concentration is at the root of mental mastery. Seriously? I know. It surprised me too. But it is true. The mind can accomplish extraordinary things. You have learned this. The very fact that you have a desire or a dream means that you have the corresponding capacity to realize it. This is one of the great universal truths known to the sages of Savannah. However, to liberate the power of the mind, you must first be able to harness it and direct its focus only to the task at hand. The moment you concentrate the focus of your mind on a singular purpose, extraordinary gifts will appear within your life. Why is it so important to have a concentrated mind? Let me offer you a riddle that will answer your question nicely. Say you were lost in the woods in the middle of winter. You desperately needed to stay warm. All you have in your knapsack is a letter your best friend has sent to you, a tin of tuna, and a small magnifying glass that you carry to compensate for your fading eyesight. Luckily, you manage to find some dry kindling wood, but unfortunately you have no matches. How would you light the fire? Good grief. Julian had stumped me. I had no idea what the answer was. I give up. It's very simple. Place the letter among the dry wood and hold the magnifying glass over it. The rays of the sun will be focused so as to ignite the fire within a matter of seconds. And what about the can of tuna? Oh, I just threw that in to distract you from the obvious solution, Julian replied with a smile. But the essence of the example is this. Putting the letter over the dry wood would produce no result. Yet the second you use the magnifying glass to concentrate the scattered rays of the sun onto the letter, it will ignite. This analogy holds true for the mind. When you concentrate its tremendous power on definite, meaningful objectives, you will quickly ignite the flames of your personal potential and produce startling results. Like what? I asked. Only you can answer this question. What is it that you are searching for? Do you want to be a better father and live a more balanced, rewarding life? Do you desire more spiritual fulfillment? Is it adventure and fun that you feel you are lacking? Give it some thought. How about eternal happiness? Go big or stay home, he chuckled. Nothing like starting off small. Well, you can have that too. How? The sages of Savannah have known the secret of happiness for over 5,000 years. Fortunately, they were willing to share this gift with me. Do you want to hear it? No, I thought I'd take a break and go wallpaper the garage first. Huh? Of course I want to hear the secret of eternal happiness, Julian. Isn't that what everyone is searching for, ultimately? True. Well, here it is. Could I trouble you for another cup of tea? Come on, quit stalling. All right. The secret of happiness is simple. Find out what you truly love to do, and then direct all of your energy towards doing it. If you study the happiest, healthiest, most satisfied people of our world, you will see that each and every one of them has found their passion in life, and then spent their days pursuing it. This calling is almost always one that in some way serves others. Once you are concentrating your mental power and energy on a pursuit that you love, abundance flows into your life, and all your desires are fulfilled with ease and grace. So, simply figure out what turns you on and then do it? If it is a worthy pursuit, Julian replied. How do you define worthy? As I said, John, your passion must in some way improve or serve the lives of others. Viktor Frankl said it more elegantly than I ever could when he wrote, Success, like happiness, cannot be pursued. It must ensue. And it only does so as the unintended side effect of one's personal dedication to a cause greater than oneself. Once you find out what your life's work is, your world will come alive. You will wake up every morning with a limitless reservoir of energy and enthusiasm. All your thoughts will be focused on your definite objective. You won't have time to waste time. Valuable mental power will not, therefore, be wasted on trivial thoughts. You will automatically erase the worry habit and become far more effective and productive. Interestingly, you will also have a deep sense of inner harmony, as if you are somehow being guided to realize your mission. It is a wonderful feeling. I love it, Julian offered gleefully. Fascinating. And I like the part about getting up feeling good. To be really honest with you, Julian, most days I wish I could just stay under the covers. It would be so much better than facing the traffic, the angry clients, the aggressive opponents, and the ceaseless flow of negative influences. It all makes me feel so tired. Do you know why most people sleep so much? Why? Because they really don't have anything else to do. Those who rise with the sun all have one thing in common. Insanity? Very funny. No, they all have a purpose that fans the flames of their inner potential. They are driven by their priorities, but not in an unhealthy, obsessive way. It is more effortless and gentle than that. And given their enthusiasm and love for what they are doing in their lives, such people live in the moment. Their attention is fully and completely on the task at hand. Therefore, there are no energy leaks. These people are the most vibrant and vital individuals you will ever have the good fortune to meet. Energy leaks? Sounds a little New Agey, Julian. I'll bet you didn't learn that one at Harvard Law School. True. The sages of Sivana pioneered that concept. Though it has been around for centuries, its application is just as relevant today as it was when it was first developed. Too many of us are consumed by needless and endless worry. This drains us of our natural vitality and energy. Have you ever seen the inner tube of a bicycle tire? Of course. When it is fully inflated, it can easily take you to your destination. But if there are leaks in it, the tube eventually deflates, and your journey comes to an abrupt end. This is also how the mind works. Worry causes your precious mental energy and potential to leak, just like air leaking out of an inner tube. Soon you have no energy left. All your creativity, optimism, and motivation has been drained, leaving you exhausted. I know the feeling. I often spend my days in the chaos of crisis. I have to be everywhere at once, and I can't seem to please everyone. On those days, I notice that even though I have done very little physical labor, all my worrying leaves me totally deflated by the end of the day. But the only thing I can do when I get home is pour myself a scotch and cuddle up with the remote control. Exactly. Too much stress does this to you. Once you find your purpose, however, life becomes much easier and far more rewarding. When you figure out what your main aim or destiny really is, you will never have to work another day in your life. Early retirement? No, said Julian, in the no-nonsense tone he had mastered during his days as an eminent lawyer. Your work will be play. Wouldn't it be a little risky for me to give up my job to start searching for my overriding passion and purpose? I mean, I have a family and real obligations. I have 4 people who depend on me. I'm not saying that you have to leave the legal profession tomorrow. You will, however, have to start taking risks. Shake up your life a bit. Get rid of the cobwebs. Take the road less travelled. Most people live within the confines of their comfort zone. Yogi Raman was the first person to explain to me that the best thing you can do for yourself is regularly move beyond it. This is the way to lasting personal mastery, and to realize the true potential of your human endowments. And what might those be? Your mind, your body, and your soul. So what risk should I take? Stop being so practical. Start doing the things you have always wanted to do. I have known lawyers who have quit their jobs to become stage actors and accountants who have become jazz musicians. In the process, they have found the deep happiness that had eluded them for so long. So what if they could no longer afford 2 vacations a year and a posh summer home in the Caymans? Calculated risk-taking will pay huge dividends. How will you ever get to third base with 1 foot on second? I see your point. So take the time to think. Discover your real reason for being here, and then have the courage to act on it. With due respect, Julian, all I do is think. As a matter of fact, part of my problem is that I think too much. My mind never stops. It is filled with mental chatter. It drives me crazy sometimes. What I'm suggesting is different. The sages of Sivana all took time daily to silently contemplate not only where they were, but where they were going. They took the time to reflect on their purpose and how they were living their lives every day. Most importantly, they thought deeply and genuinely about how they would improve the next day. Daily incremental improvements produce lasting results, which in turn lead to positive change. So I should take the time to reflect on my life regularly? Yes. Even 10 minutes of focused reflection a day will have a profound impact on the quality of your life. I understand where you are coming from, Julian. The problem is, once my day gets cranking, I can't even find 10 minutes to eat lunch. My friend, saying that you don't have time to improve your thoughts and your life is like saying you don't have time to stop for gas because you are too busy driving. Eventually, it will catch up with you. Yeah, I know. Hey, you were going to share some techniques with me, Julian, I said, hoping to learn some practical ways to apply the wisdom I was hearing. There is one technique for mastering the mind that towers above all the rest. It is a favorite of the sages of Sivana, who taught it to me with great faith and trust. After practicing it for only 21 days, I felt more energetic, enthusiastic, and vibrant than I had felt in years. The practice is over 4,000 years old. It is called the Heart of the Rose. Tell me more. All that you need to perform this exercise is a fresh rose and a silent place. Natural surroundings are best, but a quiet room will also do nicely. Start to stare at the center of the rose, its heart. Yogi Raman told me that a rose is very much like life. You will meet thorns along the way, but if you have faith and believe in your dreams, you will eventually move beyond the thorns into the glory of the flower. Keep staring at the rose. Notice its color, texture, and design. Savor its fragrance, and think only about this wonderful object in front of you. At first, other thoughts will start entering your mind, distracting you from the heart of the rose. This is the mark of an untrained mind. But you need not worry. Improvement will come quickly. Simply return your attention to the object of your focus. Soon your mind will grow strong and disciplined. That's all there is to it? Sounds pretty easy. That is the beauty of it, John, Julian replied. However, this ritual must be performed daily for it to be effective. For the first few days, you will find it difficult to spend even 5 minutes in this exercise. Most of us live at such a frenetic pace that true stillness and silence is something foreign and uncomfortable. Most people hearing my words will say that they have no time to sit and stare at a flower. These are the same people that will tell you that they have no time to enjoy the laughter of children,